Those visiting with us today, thank you very much for taking time to be here. In just a moment, we'll be starting back into a series I started last week. Over the next month or so, or several weeks, when I'm speaking on a Sunday morning, we'll be on this series related to the family, particularly child training. I need to mention first, though, once a month, we go back to, and I preach at the New Work on the west side of Philadelphia, just west of Philadelphia, and that'll be today, so we'll be scooting out very quickly. That's why we'll be having to get out the door. They meet at 2, and so we're going to have to be able to get over there. Last week, we talked about the idea of home improvement, not talking about the house, but our actual homes, by applying biblical principles. And we pointed out the difference between overly concerned about what kind of house you're in to what kind of home you're in. It's good to have a good house, too. That's a wonderful thing. But if you need to choose between the two, and if you recall, we pointed out one of those represents the home where Abraham Lincoln was born, and the other is the home where John Wilkes Booth was born. One of those is a lot better house. It didn't mean it made a better person. We talked about the difference between temporary threats and eternal threats. Very often, we face something where we have to do something about that now. And as men, if we find a broken window or termites in our house, we're going to do what? We're going to take care of that now. Our what is at stake? Our home and our belongings. But how much more important are our families? We talked about not wanting to have a house that's upside down. God should be in control of the family. The husband and father should lead it with his wife and then the children in submission to them, and we don't want the home to be upside down. So today we're going to start talking about child training. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, Ezekiel chapter 18 points out the father doesn't bear the iniquity of the son does not bear the iniquity of the father. You can have, in fact, the Bible has a record of a number of good men who had rotten sons, from Josiah to David to Samuel and on and on. But there is a general truism here. Lots of things in the book of Proverbs are truisms. This is the way it normally goes. Idleness leads to poverty. Diligence leads to wealth. That doesn't mean that there's never been was diligent that wasn't able to get ahead, and it doesn't mean that there's never been an idle person that didn't inherit, you know, a boatload of money from somebody. But that this is the way life works. Another example would be Proverbs 15, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. Well, if you are the Gestapo and you got a bunch of guys with machine guns behind you, and you can probably speak pretty grievously to people and they're probably going to do what you said. But as a general thing in life, and you can have some people that even soft words it's not going to have an effect on. This is the way it generally is. So, we need to think about how important it is to train up our children in the way that they should go. If you expect tantrums, you're going to get them. And if you look at parents who their children throw tantrums, if you ask them, they say, do you expect that your children won't? What would they say? No, I mean, they do. Look. I don't like it. I don't know what I can do about it. I'm hoping he'll grow out of it, but that's what he does. She's what? She expects that he's going to throw tantrums. If you expect dishonesty, you'll get it. Your kids tell you the truth? No, they're kids. They lie. What is he expecting? He's expecting them to lie. If you expect that attitude, you get it. But if you really expect the opposite and require and train for the opposite, you will get the opposite. Now, somebody might say, what? You mean if I just expected my child wouldn't lie, he's going to tell the truth? Yes, eventually. If we're talking about a young child, if you really expect it, yes, you'll get what you expect. It doesn't mean that's all you will get. You may get some of the opposite until they learn what your expectations are and to fall in line. Let me illustrate with, and I don't know what it's like now, but I think a lot of us are familiar with what it used to be like, say, at Paris Island when they bring in the recruits for the Marines or something. And here's the old school drill instructor. When the guys get off the bus, does he expect that all of those new people know how to make a bed to his expectations, know how to march like he wants them to march, know how to do push-ups the way he wants them to do push-ups and the number he expects? Does he think he gets off that, oh, I got no job here, you know, I'm done. I'm sure that these guys are already ready to go. No, he doesn't believe that at all. But after 6 weeks, what are those men doing? They're making that bed like he told them to make it. They're doing those push-ups like he told them to do it. Why? We have a Marine right here. Why? He expected it, didn't he? Because he expected it, he didn't tolerate and accept what didn't fit the expectations. When we expect bad behavior, then we start tolerating bad behavior. So expect better. Parents, here's our text. And Judith Harris wrote years ago a book, and the idea was, do parents really matter? And it was reviewed in one of the news magazines. And I never read the book, but I read Sharon Begley's review of the book in the magazine. Fortunately, she was not real impressed with it, and I'm glad. Her argument was, and everybody's heard, you know, stuff on the nature-nurture debate, right? If you've got more than one child, I think you'll agree that kids are often born in the world wired a little bit differently, different personalities and stuff. But you also know that your parenting makes a difference. Nature and nurture are both involved. But this book said basically, no, it's what you do doesn't matter. What do parents really matter? And her basic answer was basically on the no side of that. She did say she said that your children are going to be who they are dependent on two things, their genetics and their peers. So if they're genetically inclined that way and they hang around people doing these things, that completely molds who your child is. You're just somebody that pays the bills. She did say, because peers are so important, there is something you can do. You can make enough money so that they get to go to the best schools and be around the best peers. And you can make enough money to buy and dress them in all the latest styles, because looks are important and you want them to be accepted by, you know, the popular group and such. And you might also need to spring for some orthodontics or plastic surgery if necessary. That's what you can do as a parent. I've thought about this, and I believe that in a lot of families, it is genetics and peer and media that determine who the children are. If the parents what? If the parents don't spend time training and raising their children. If you don't, and a lot of people don't. I saw some statistics years ago where the average father in Britain was either 15 minutes a day or 15 minutes a week with his son. Now, if that's all the time you're spending with your children, what impact are you going to have? Pretty much nothing. But these other things, that's not what we're supposed to be doing. Let me give you an illustration and we'll take a look. Turn to Deuteronomy 6 and we'll see that passage in just a moment. In fact, let's start with that passage. Deuteronomy 6. This is what fathers were told in Israel. Deuteronomy chapter 6. Verse 6. Let's start with verse 5. Hear, O Israel, The Lord, our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise. That's parental involvement and parental training. Let's give two illustrations. You're going to be putting in a garden, perhaps, for this summer, and maybe you've already started some things on that. What's going to happen if in the spring you plant seed and then don't tend to the garden? What kind of harvest are you going to have? You're going to get weeds. Now, suppose I'm your neighbor and you have worked your garden. You've prepared a good environment, you know, for your garden. You have gotten out weeds when they've got in there. You made sure that there was nutrition in the soil. You made sure to water it when there wasn't much rain. You just really, if there was a late frost, you protected. You just really cared for your garden. I, on the other hand, sowed some seed, and then at the end of the season, I'm going out there to see what I got. And, you know, maybe here's a little bitty shriveled up cucumber or some nasty looking little pepper. And then I look across the fence and I say, oh, you're so lucky. You have just easy vegetables. You see the difference. Cats are going to give birth to kittens this spring, and birds are going to lay eggs. When that egg in your backyard hatches, that little bitty bird can't do much on its own, right? Does it need its mama? Yes. He's an ugly little thing with just he's nasty. And he can't fly. He can't go get his worm. And so he can sit there and open his mouth and wait for mom to bring a worm and put it in there. But in a few weeks, what's he doing? He's gone. He doesn't need her anymore after a few weeks. The kitten. Its eyes open up, it nurses a bit, and then it's gone. Doesn't need them anymore. If you're a leatherback turtle, you don't even see your folks. You know, the egg's laid in the beach. Later, you're like, you know, you crawl out of the sand, there's some water, and boom, you never even see them. You take this little baby right there. Jeremy, how old is the baby now?
7 weeks.
7 weeks. Now, at 7 weeks, that bird would be fine. Jeremy, is your baby ready to go out in the world all by itself? No. No. But within a few weeks, right? Well, at least a year, kids ought to be out of the house, right? Do you see how God made children? We're dependent on adult supervision and provision for years and years and years and years. And in that time, we need to be being trained and learning. If you're a bird, once you know how to get a worm and fly, and some of that's going to be instinct, you're good to go. Being a human being is a little bit more complicated. Higher responsibilities, higher challenges. And you know what? We live in a culture now where a lot of parents spend their time trying to avoid that challenge. Just drop the kids off in daycare, you know, and spend a few minutes with them here. We'll make a quality time. And you know what quality time is for kids, little kids? Quality time is a lot of time. And then, you know, ship them here, ship them there, send them there, send them there. And then later, I remember seeing a lady in a store over here in Gettysburg, had two precious little girls, and she came up to the register, and the older woman looked and she said, "Oh, they're so cute when they're that age." And then, not joking around, she goes, "You know, but then they get older, but then they turn into teenagers, and then it's terrible," or something. And I mean, it wasn't like, you know, "Oh, it'll get harder." But I mean, it was kind of like just a pessimistic kind of way I view cats. You know, it's like the kitten stage is nice. I told the mom, "It doesn't have to be that way." She said, "I know. But there's a lot of people that don't. And squander the time that we need to use training them." I want to talk about early training in the word no. I want you to think of the importance of the word no. Go back to Genesis chapter 2. God has created Adam. How old is Adam? Well, in Genesis 1, it said he made both man and woman on the sixth day. And in Genesis 1, we have he made man first. So when he makes woman, he's still a day old. I believe Adam was fully formed, but I don't think he had a whole lot of wisdom. I don't think he had a whole lot of experience. And God started with a rule. What's the rule? Verse 17. After saying, "You can eat of every tree of the garden, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you shall not eat. For in the day that you eat it, you will surely die." God gave him one rule here that's given to us, one prohibition. And what is it? It's no. Adam, look out at the garden. You can eat of that tree, you can eat of that tree, you can eat of that tree. This one right here, this one. This is a no-no. That's what God's doing. He's telling them, don't touch. No, no. And then you have Adam and Eve, and the serpent says, and he gets her to take that was forbidden, and then she gives it to Adam, and he takes it, and they're both kicked out of the garden. And notice, it wasn't, you know, "Don't make me tell you again," or something like that. They were kicked out of the garden. And that early rule, no, was fundamental. And there had to be a decision of whether or not to submit and obey. When your children were born, what were their first words? Raise your hand if you remember, if your child's first word was mom or mama. Or mommy, or something like that. Any of those? All right. Does anybody remember a child maybe before their first word was no? It's one of the early words they learn. They learn mom, mama, mommy, whatever. And they learn dada, maybe a little bit after mama, because they're spending more time with mom. And maybe it's easier to say too, they're more attached to mom. But then one of the very early words they learn is no. And it's really important, because no is a word you need to understand before you understand all the reasons why. If you've got a bunch of little children and you say all of us give you threes and four-year-olds, and you're going to watch everybody's three and four-year-olds, say we have 30 of them. Okay. And we say, "Now feel free to make rules and enforce them." You say, "Oh, we're not going to need a lot of rules. Now, I'm just going to talk to them about respect and consideration." And we all go off to do whatever we do. And there you are, and you've said, "Now, children, let's just think about mutual respect and consideration." You know, how's that going to go? That's not going to go real well. You're going to need to get specific. After a few minutes, no hitting, no kicking, nobody. No, you can't do that. You look at when they're coming out of Egypt in Exodus chapter 20, the Ten Commandments. You know what most or a lot of them were? There were no-nos. No-no on the killing. No-no on the stealing. No-no on the murder. No-no on the adultery. Now, are there higher laws in the Old Testament? Yeah, when Jesus was asked, which is the greatest commandment? Jesus said, the greatest commandment is love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, Deuteronomy 6. The second commandment is love your neighbor as yourself, Leviticus. He said, all the other commandments depend on that. But the people coming out of Egypt, were they an especially mature people? They were not an especially mature people. And there were some very important specifics. When children come into the world, they are not going to be able to understand all of the reasoning behind why something is a no-no. There's a sharp knife. You know, you're cutting some onions. The child is trying to grab the knife. Whether your child understands the concepts of an emergency room and stitches and capillaries and clotting and stuff like that, they need to be able to understand the word no. And so that's one of the biggest parts of training. The first time Bertina ever spanked one of the kids, it was, of course, April, because she was the first kid. And my friend Mike Mara had pointed out, maybe after this previous, it's time to start spanking her, you know. The first spanking at home was April had discovered, you know, how much fun it was to just unroll the toilet paper, you know. And Bertina said, no, no. And April went, you know. And then Bertina took her little hand and she went, no, no. And of course, April, and she stopped. She stopped doing that. And you see what happened there? First, she gave instructions. No, April didn't care until there was a consequence. And when she found she had mom's disapproval and there was a repercussion, then she didn't want to do it. That's so important. When a child learns that, you've laid the groundwork for being able to train that child. Look down the road a few years. Your son's about to run out into the street to get a soccer ball or something that went out in the street. There's a car coming. What are you going to yell? No, stop! At that second right there, you're going to see how that child's been trained. If he just ignores you and runs out into the street, you've raised a child that's not used to responding immediately when they're told no. If they start arguing, why are you always telling? You've raised a child to be disrespectful. If they stop and they look at you to see what further instruction is, you've done a very good job. Because they understood no. There's to be a respect and compliance for the prohibitory no, and there should be a zero tolerance for the rebellious no. Because the child will then learn that no is a powerful word. You know, they want to get into the chocolate pudding, you know, no, no, can't do it. They want to do this, can't do it. They want to stick a fork in the electrical outlet, can't do it. All these things, no, that's a powerful word. Missy, pick up your toys, no. You know, and they decide to try out this marvelous power. There needs to be a zero tolerance for the defiant and rebellious. When I was a teenager, I decided I was never going to have kids that say no. I'd seen children that would say no. I said, I'm not going to have that. That doesn't mean you won't have a child maybe one time try it out and say no, and it's drill sergeant time. The child needs to find out unquestionably, totally, that will never be accepted and that they are going to be punished for that, and they can never give a defiant no to the parent's instruction. Now, that's different than the type of no on other things. Like if you say, would you like another piece of cake? No, thank you. Nothing wrong with saying the word no when it's an answer to something. I'm talking about that defiant no, where the child says, I'm not going to do what you want me to do. Let me give an illustration. This years ago, there was a woman who would talk to me about her child. You know, he just so this, he just so that. She would call me up and say, listen to him, listen to him. Do you hear? Listen to it. I would take the child and he would behave for me. And there was the idea, there must be something wrong with him. He behaves when I'm with him. Well, that's around you. Well, guess what? If he had some genetic flaw that he couldn't behave himself, he would have been misbehaving around me as well and other people as well. But one time, during a study, the child was told to go somewhere, and he did it, but as he went, no. He went ahead and did it, but he got in his little no. And a few minutes later, she started complaining again about, I don't know what to do with him. I said, well, you need to be consistent. Like a while ago when he told you no. And she goes, you heard that? I said, yeah. And one time she told me, she said, I don't have time to deal with all of his misbehavior. That's why you got misbehavior when you don't deal with it. And also, if you let a battle develop where you think that you're not the adult in control, and you let this start going on, and it just becomes negativity and such, you're off on the wrong foot. It needs to be from the beginning, that when mom says no, it's no. You do that, and much of your job in parenting is already done. Here's some helpful tips as we begin to wind up here. If you don't mean it, don't say it. If you mean it, enforce it. I used to know a guy, and he despised his mom, and partly she was just an annoying person. She would begin with no, and then later after he, you know, argued, she would change to a yes. You know, but it was just kind of automatically, no. That's not good parenting. You know, can I go play in the street? No. You know, can we have a BB gun fight? No. Can I breathe in and out? No. Not everything needs to be no. Kids need to be able to have fun. Kids need to be able to explore. Kids need to be able to do things. It doesn't mean you're a good parent because I say no to everything. But Jesus said what? Let your yes be yes and your no be no. It's an important foundation. It's learning to submit to an earthly father, and that prepares them for submission to a far more important father. If a child grows up and when they're told no, they do it anyway. If a child grows up when they're told no, then they'll wait until you're not looking. If a child grows up and when they're told no, then they'll argue and rationalize and try to find their way around it. If they've treated you that way, have you ever seen people that say they want to serve the Lord, but that's how they treat God? You've seen that, haven't you? Don't ever think that you're being a good parent by letting your child misbehave. Don't think that you're being a selfish parent for requiring your child to behave. The best thing you can do for your child is train your child to behave. And when they learn at an early age, mom said no, so that's no. When they learn to respect mom and dad's no, when they get ready to serve God, guess what principle they've already learned? They've already learned the principle of submission and self-denial. But I wanted to come in and eat some of that cake that you're fixing to take, you know, to you know, you're making a birthday cake for somebody else, and the kid comes in, oh, can I have some cake? Well, the answer is no. You know, maybe later, but right now, no. And if it's, and it's a fight and a tantrum, they have to get it. You're just raising a spoiled brat. When they understand, oh, my parents said no. I accept that. What have they learned? Self-control. Self-denial. The world does not revolve around me. I'll close with two stories. Years ago, I heard, I don't know what type of program, maybe it was a sports program, but the fellow was describing a kid, and he said, we were at a party, and this was years ago, There used to be these things called vinyl records. Maybe not even ask your parents, maybe ask your grandparents what those were. I imagine y'all know what vinyl records were. But this is back in the days of vinyl records. And there's a record play, and this little bratty kid walks over, he just takes the needle and goes, and so the parent, this father goes, no, no, don't do that. And his mother steps in, oh, we've decided that our son will never be told no. Seriously? And then he went on to relate that this kid grew up to be a horrible kid. Later, when he was bigger, you know, he coached him in Little League and stuff. Just a horrible, rotten kid. Moms, you may think, when that baby's born, you're supposed to love him. You're supposed to be devoted to him. You're not supposed to think that the universe revolves around him. And you're the mom, he's not. And if you start treating him like the world is supposed to revolve around him, you're the only one that's going to buy into that. His teachers are not going to buy into that. His bosses are not going to buy into that. His co-workers are not going to buy into that. His wife and her family are not going to buy into that. And the police department is not going to buy into that. And the jails are full of some people, I think, that have been raised with that kind of an idea. I used to live near a little boy, and the parents should have known better. They believed the Bible, but the mother had apparently read a book about that you shouldn't discipline children. And so she didn't. And he was just a rotten little kid. 4 is pretty much my favorite age. And he was 4, and I didn't like him, which is sad. I mean, 4 should be, but he just wasn't a likable kid. I opened the door of my car, and there's this pile of dirt inside my car. You know, I'd hear his parents over there yelling for him, come here, yelling for him, calling his name over and over and over to protect the guilty. I'll change the name. Rodney, come here. And I'd just watch him. He just ignores. Rodney, get over here. And I'd watch him. He just ignores. Later, Rodney, get here right now. He just ignores. Or something like that. And then finally he comes by. I said, why didn't you go? When your parents called, you go, I didn't hear them. You know, a little boy with him said, yes, you did. You know, it's this horrible little kid. He opened my door one day, and he's standing there. The front of his overalls are soaked, and the back of his overalls are brown. He goes, I don't have to use the bathroom. That was a human being whose parents ruined him. And of course, then they sent him to school, and you know what happened. Of course, immediately problems, because she read some foolish book saying that children don't need to be disciplined. She ought to have been reading this book. I'm going to put one more chart up, and then we'll stop. Parenting pitfalls, things to avoid. Number one is failing to discipline. He who spares his rod hates his son. He who loves him disciplines him diligently. We'll pick up at that point later on in the series. And I've gone over time, so we're going to need to get on out the door. Thank you very much for your attention. And if you need to respond, won't you come as we stand and sing?